You're listening to Path to Glory, the Warhammer Underworlds podcast that focuses on competitive gaming, player development, and community growth. I'm your host, Aman Kusro, and today I am joined by a savage of a lad, a wild hyena out in the Calgarian wastes. I don't know. He's from Calgary. He's a cool guy. Captain Murder, aka Derek. How's it going?
I'm doing good today. How are you doing, Aman?
I'm good. I appreciate you working with me on scheduling, because it's been kind of a nightmare to get this together. But I'm down for early morning podcasts.
Yeah, so for me, I actually start at about 4:30 each morning. And so I realized that part of the scheduling difficulties has been mine, because I'm out in Calgary, which is Mountain Standard Time, so close enough to the left coast. But it means that I want to go to bed early, like the old man that I am, and everybody else who's more available in the evening really isn't able to accommodate my schedule. So that's why we get to record at about 0900 here.
Yeah. Well, you know, I also wake up early, not 4:30 though. I tried that like twice and I was like, never again. But six around like 5:45, 6 is where I'm up. I also don't sleep. So I'm like a 5 to 6 hours kind of guy. Probably not healthy. I'll probably need to work on that. But, I'm just trying to maximize my day, if you will.
And what have you been maximizing your day with?
I feel like you're trying to tee up a joke here. Let's see. There's
no jokes here. I was actually quite curious, because for a lot of people, as many of you would know, both Aman and I are on Vassal quite a bit. I have not seen you on Vassal as much. So I've sort of been wondering what you've been playing.
Yeah, that's true. Well, playing is different. I mean, I think like working wise, like I've been really busy. I'm a director now at my company. And so I think that comes with more responsibilities that happened in August. So it's just like a lot more work, to the point where like I had to get this room divider. Because I have, I get one room, right? The man cave, but the man cave is now office as well. Because I was getting distracted, with my gaming PC, my PS5's in here. So I put up this, I guess I'll show the camera to Derek, but it's like a partition, like a room divider that is like, for my office, so that when I'm inside like the room divider, if obviously, since most of you can't see this, actually almost everyone except Derek, think of like, when you watch like a period film or like an 80s movie and like, like a handmaiden is speaking to a princess and then she like walks behind this like standing wooden partition that's like freestanding, and then she changes while she's talking to her handmaiden or whatever. That's what it looks like, but mine's like not as ornate or nice. But it does the job. I cocoon myself for work. But I feel like because I've been working so much more, I have less time for gaming or catching up on my shows. And so I looked it up, because I didn't really know why. I forget the name of it, but it's like a thing that people do is they'll stay up late for no reason, like just watching shows or like talking or playing games, because it's a way of you to feel like you can take back control in your day.
Okay. I've never heard that. I take control of my day by getting lots of sleep.
Yeah. I sacrifice sleep for my guilty pleasures. So, but yeah, in terms of gaming, and I guess as a great segue into LVO, I've also been like playing, not prioritizing, but I've just been playing another game. I've always gone on record to say Underworlds is my favorite game. But for me, I think there was a far list that hadn't happened for a while that I think created a general sentiment, at least some of the people I speak to, where it's like, I'm not really sure if like right now the game is exactly where I want it to be. And I'm going to enjoy that environment. And I think post Far List, some of the revelations surrounding the US Open and some of the competitive events, because I like to travel and compete, have been Nemesis focused. And so for me, I just feel like the game is just in a different spot. It's thriving. Well, I don't know if it's thriving, but it's doing well, certainly. We've seen numbers go up steadily. But for me, like, it's not scratching the same level of decision making pre-game and during the game at the moment, right? Because oftentimes, like if I play a game and I say, okay, you're playing Purifiers, which means you're in Nemesis. Oh, you're probably playing Daring Delvers. Okay, yes, you are. Great. Well, I know all the cards in your deck, right? So, and maybe not all, maybe that's a bit like egregious to say, but like I would say 90% of the cards I know you're taking, I know what your strategy is. I know that I have to stop you from holding three objectives, murder Bahanar, stuff like that, right? And I see you shaking your head because it's like, it just feels like it's less.
I'm nodding my head, by the way, sorry.
Oh yeah, sorry, not shaking, but nodding. Yeah. So I don't know, I think that's kind of why I've been playing more Marvel Crisis Protocol, because I do feel like the decision-making is more complex at the moment when compared to, I think, the way that I prefer Warhammer Underworlds, which is more championship, bleeding edge, big brain stuff. So I don't know. And that's kind of what I think led my decision. And I think it's a great time to jump into LVO. So, you know, we roomed together for LVO, which was awesome, which was fun. We ended up playing different games. I went for Marvel Crisis Protocol. You went for Warhammer Underworlds. And it was really cool because like one of us was able to get the hotel, and then we were like, great, you know, whoever gets the hotel, we're going to room together. And then when we got there, I think we had a pretty funky hotel room. You want to tell them about it?
Yeah. So it was actually, really neat. There was the vault ceiling windows, that overlooked the strip. So we actually had a really nice view. We certainly had to draw the curtains because boy, those bright lights of Vegas do not lie. And boy, have I been putting in so much thought into this. Between the main room where the beds were, and then the bathroom was a window that looked into the shower. Yes. And so if someone felt like it, they could watch the other person shower in the bathroom. And you know what? I put in a lot of thought to this. And I think I figured out why it was there. Mm. Vegas has a certain reputation. And even though you and I are addicted to our plastic miniatures, there are other people that do get addicted to other things. And just like we go overboard with our plastic toys, some people go overboard in their pursuits while in Vegas. So I've got to think that might be it. But then you'd almost think that they should be everywhere, but we had a funky room. So either way, you know, if you had to ask, Timmy Trump had always asked this, where's the freaks at? Well, I guess they were in that room.
Yeah, it was really funny because it's like, it's not a big window, right? It was maybe like a head-shaped window. It was truly like it was like a small window frame on the wall. And like, I just remember one morning, like, you know, Derek wakes up earlier than I do. And then I go to the bathroom to shower, and then like I just kind of look over and I just see, and Derek's not looking at me. Derek's just like, you know, on his iPad or whatever. But like I just was like, you know, you feel a presence. So I looked over, and then like Derek looks at me, like, and we just start laughing, you know. because so it was like, you know, it was weird. Obviously we were respectful of each other's privacy, but I thought, like, didn't you say that they were like, for $10 more a night, we'll get you a real cool room or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, so Derek got sold immediately, and turns out cool is interpreted very differently in Vegas.
Yeah.
So, which I thought was really funny. But yeah, we had a good time. For those of you who did not attend LVO, we were at the Rio. So last time we were all there, it was Bally's. Which is on the strip. This is slightly off the strip. So I would say that it's like not as nice of a hotel, but in terms of a convention center, I think it was the better option because it was massive in terms of the sheer room, number of rooms and the availability. So it felt more like a con in that sense. And I guess we're all there to game, right? So the gaming aspect of it was great.
Yeah. And one thing, especially to that point, at the Bali, Underworlds and Kill Team and a lot of the skirmish games were actually up on the 10th floor in a bunch of little conference rooms there. And then all the big main games, so the AOS and 40K, were down on the main floor. So you felt really separated from the rest of the convention. Whereas here, everything was in one area. So you came in, there was a guard there to make sure that you had your wristband and you weren't smuggling in a bunch of food and drinks. And the registration desk was there, and then you were out into the convention proper. So it was easy to go around and visit Amon, who was playing MCP, or go visit my cousin. Actually turned out to be there playing 40K, which was a surprise. I didn't know he was going until I think I was on the plane. So I was able to come heckle him a little bit. John Reese was there playing Kill Team. Zach was there playing Kill Team. We ran into Victor.
Victor. Victor with a W.
That's right. So it was awesome to be able to be in a closer environment that was also able to hold a lot more people than Bali was able to. So I really liked how they did it at the Rio there. Yes, it was off the strip, but on the last day, I actually walked to the strip just to actually get some sunlight after being inside for 3 days. And it was less than 20 minutes before I was on the strip, which was great. So I'll give that one a 10/10.
Yeah, no, it was cool. It was really nice running into Victor. Actually ran into him the first night. I think we were just hungry and we were looking for food, and he was like walking around with two boxes of pizza. And then he was like, and Dean Bills was there. So if you've been following Underworlds for a while, you'll know that Dean Bills is, at one point, arguably one of the best players in the game. And he had I think he won Underworld, or not Underworld, the AOS US Open last year. That's what Victor was saying.
Yeah.
So Dean Bills, monster at any game he plays. Unfortunately, we didn't get to run into him. Our schedules just never worked out. But yeah, got to run into Zach, who unfortunately couldn't make the episode today, and John as well. JWR, and we had a pretty good first night. I think we went to go see the GW preview, and there was no lines. There was just a mass of people. So we were just I wonder if we just stand next to the door, can we just get in? And then doors open, and we were great. So we sat in the front row, which was cool. So me, Derek, and John were hanging out, and Derek was super enthusiastic. I don't know how many drinks he'd had at that point, but it was
I poured myself onto the plane, let alone getting off of that one.
Yeah, that's funny because, we have this great GW presentation, and then they're anyone down for Warcry? And two people yell. And it's anyone down for Underworlds? And it's just me and Derek. And Derek's lets out this guttural roar, blood for the blood, whatever, And it's they were just wow. I think we were louder than Kill Team, just you and me.
I think so too. Kill Team probably had about 50 people there, but I would put our decibels above theirs.
Yes. Yeah. So shout out to Derek's incredible range, if you will. So that was a good night. We got to hang out with John, and then I think John went to go hang out with his Kill Team peeps, and then we kind of did our thing. I will say, Derek, I feel like you were very focused this event. Usually at previous events, we'll just get hammered every evening, but you were just I remember the first night, or second night after day one, and we'll talk about your games in a moment, but I was yo, you want to grab drinks? And Derek's I think I'm just going to go in early tonight. I'm going to focus. I want to get my sleep. I want to hydrate. Because I want to win this thing. And win you did, Derek.
Yeah, I very much was in it to win it. And it's funny. I think I started this either Nova or maybe the Alberta Classic Grand Clash last year. I've always had a saying that friends don't let friends Shadespire sober. And I do stick by that. But I've also noticed that when I get either to the finals or, the last game, my decision-making is suspect. And I don't think I've ever lost a game of Underworlds ever in my life. But I think maybe I might have been behind at the end. And I think some of that might have had to do with the dozen pints I had down through the day. So I sort of decided, I'm in this one to win it. I was going to be very limited on my chances to qualify for Worlds. So I decided, I'm going to go in for that one. And then once I've got the win, then I'll tie it on. So I had several beverages going down there, and I had several beverages after the games, but it was definitely, Derek was pretty goddamn boring. I don't think I earned the name Captain Murder that week.
You were Captain Sober. That's what you know. Yeah, I was surprised, but I appreciated the dedication, and ultimately you achieved your goal. So it worked, right? So, yeah. Derek, you went to go play Warhammer Underworlds. It was a grand clash. What were your thoughts going into it?
So I had a few. So again, and I always want to shout out the team up here between Jesse and Yuri and Greg and David Beardarn for those who play Vassal. They're really my team. And I've said this before, Mithril sharpens Mithril. And I got to say, pound for pound, Berta has the best players in the world. So when I was going in on this, you know, all four of sort of my teammates have very different styles. So it gives me the opportunity to get in my reps against a lot of different areas. The other side of this, because this was a championship Grand Clash, I was playing in Vassal in the Vassal League.
Which you won.
Which I won. That's right. I forgot about that. Which also gives me the opportunity to play against a lot of different areas. So really what my mindset was going into it was I didn't know what I was going to be facing. And so I wanted to have as wide a range of knowledge and games played against and as many ideas as possible so that when I was facing someone and they pulled out their team, I wasn't going to be surprised, right? So figuring out the plan of action was really the biggest part of that, I'd say.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And I completely agree. You know, Mithril does sharpen Mithril. I think having practice partners certainly is important. And I also recommend, you know, if you can't get games in physically, just talk to people. I think that's also important as well. I think, you know, we had obviously, there was this weird moment where I wasn't sure if I was going to play Underworlds or MCP. But once we confirmed that I was playing MCP, I think the conversations we had surrounding some of your strategies and ideas were awesome too.
No, I would definitely agree with that. You know, the other side of it, anyone who's played me, I've definitely had a wide range of what I want to play depending on the time. So I played a lot of Voltron big boys. I played a lot of control when that was viable with my Curse Breakers, but I always go back to aggro. You know, it is the Alberta aggro vantage, as we call it up here. And Gnarl Spirit really falls into that extremely well. And that's so when they came out, not just because the Gnarl Spirit had that shape changing, and I'm still working on those conversions to show their spirit animals, but I also like the dynamic that they have for going into a tournament like this.
Yeah, I think that's super important, super impactful, and obviously it works, right? So you're able to get that going, and your experience and your practice kind of helps you lead the way, which is exciting. You're also playing GSP, you know?
Yeah. And as a Canadian, GSP is also George St. Pierre, who happens to be
the greatest
hound fighter in the world ever.
Mm. I will respect that point of view because you are supporting a fellow Canadian.
Yeah, fair enough.
I love GSP back in the day.
Yeah.
So we can talk about that another time. But I think for myself, you know, I alluded earlier that I wasn't necessarily interested in playing Underworlds because of some of the feelings I had on the current state of the game. Secondly, of course, I think, you know, I think you should never force anything. Mm-hmm. And I think Derek and we had discussed this, right? We had talked about how, like, just because it's your favorite game doesn't mean you should force it when you're not feeling it, because it can make you maybe not want to play it even more. And so I took the break, and I was very lucky and humbled that I was able to qualify for the LVO Invitational for MCP. It kind of capstones the competitive season, and then also post-event ushers in the new season for the year. And it was an amazing experience. Again, I was very lucky to qualify. You actually have to win a LVO qualifier that has to be pre-approved with a minimum number of players, or you have to accumulate enough points throughout the year where you can get in off points. And so luckily I got ninth at Nova, narrowly missing the top cut. I got second at the Lone Star Games Expo, and I got top 8 at the at LSO Lone Star Open, which gave me enough points to get there, which was nice. And it is invite only, and it was like, you have to remember, like, you're going into an event where like every single person has won a sizable event or like placed high enough in major events to get themselves there. So there was no easy game. It was like, it's like playing in the top 8 cut of like a very big Underworlds event. But every game feels like you're in the top 8 cut. So I went 3-3, which I was actually very happy with, because, you know, like some of these guys have hundreds of games on their belt and I have like less than 40, you know? So I felt proud to be able to, I guess go like 0.500 or going 500, you know, with the same wins and losses. And I think, you know, some of those losses could have turned into wins if dice had worked out a little bit better. So I feel like I'd made the right plays. I think MCP is a bit of a more spikier game because you play with D8s versus D6s. But ultimately, it was a good time.
Yeah, and you know what? The terrain that they had set up for the entire area was very cool all the times that I had visited. The health of that game is great, which you might imagine with the intellectual property that is Marvel. What I really liked, there was a gentleman there from Montreal and a gentleman there from Halifax. Now, and as we talked about it, the gentleman from Halifax was actually a forces member from Australia. So they call him the Aussie-Canadian or the Canadian-Aussie.
Yeah, that's Reef.
Yeah, and the gentleman from Montreal being from Quebec, so we don't really consider that part of Canada. So I was the only Canadian in that conversation, but you know what? Two really great guys that it was awesome to meet through MCP, and in general, a really great community that you all had there.
Yeah, it was fun. You came to dinner with us one night as well, and we all kind of hung out, and I had a great time. And I know that Zach had a great time playing Kill Team, so did John. So I think we all went there, we got our fix, and I think we all walked away very happy with our performance. And so yeah, that's why I didn't play Underworlds, but I guess the goal is now to focus on the Underworlds aspect of the conversation. So Derek, I understand that, you know, you're playing GSP, you went to this event. Why don't you give us a quick like rundown of sure. like the event, how many people, what the area was like, the TO. And then we can just quickly run through your games. I don't think we need to do like a full breakdown, but maybe like the top highlights from your games and your thoughts.
No problem. So the way that LVO had put it together was that the Friday was Rivals and the Saturday, Sunday was the Championship Grand Clash. Now, the TO for the entire thing was Chris from Frontline Gaming. He's mm-hmm. Anti-Hero on Discord. He did an immaculate job. He was a volunteer. He wasn't getting paid for it. I'm not sure if they comped him anything. So he did this entirely out of the goodness of his heart, which, you know, I want to give all props and appreciation to him for that. Let's see. So the other interesting part about it, the Rivals had 8 players. The Championship had 8 players. I want to say, except for myself and a gentleman named Brendan, the other 6 that were involved were playing other games on the other days. So in total, we had about, 14 total people playing Underworlds that weekend, just in the various events, which was nice because it meant that I got such a wide variety of people and warbands to play there. Friday was a skirmish event, so you got 1 game. So that really came down to you can't make any mistakes on there. And then it was a cut to the 2 for the finals. The Grand Clash, they did it as a Swiss pairing for 4 matches on the Saturday, and then a cut to 4 for the Sunday. And then there was the best painted and everything like that. One interesting part, as we were starting, they had sort of all the prizes and all the swag and the loot on display. And one thing that I will say is, and you know what, maybe we'll get into this in a little bit, but I noticed that there really wasn't a lot of Games Workshop branded, like the Grand Clash swag that they had had before COVID, right? The large shake glass trophy, some acrylics that aren't available in other places, which I was a little disappointed in. However, Zach, who is the senior manager for Games Workshop OP, he actually showed up with about $400 worth of merch as just giveaways for the tournament. So that between that and what Frontline Gaming had put in sponsor, plus some third party sponsors, there was definitely not a lack of swag and prizes to come there. And because of the sheer amount of it, everybody came away with some cool stuff and definitely got more than your entry cost in loot. So
yeah. And I want to pause right there because, you know, I don't want you to sell yourself short either. You know, we had hung out with Zach and kind of chatted with him the day before. And, you know, Derek is the one who, you know, beseeched him and said, hey, like, we're a little light on price support. Is there something that you can do? And obviously, you know, Zach came through, awesome guy. And Derek, I don't want you to not take credit for this as well, because you were able to get all those players there some awesome swag. So
and shout out to you. I am really happy for that. It's funny, I hadn't really intended it that way. What I wanted to do, and I hope that you know, the people at Games Workshop OP sort of got my idea for it, was that one of the reasons why there is such a draw to Shadespire as a whole and these Grand Clashes is because there is unique Games Workshop swag that comes for that. And you know what? At the end of the day, I'm sure everybody that's won a Grand Class trophy or has, you know, I can see in Amon's background, he's got his trophies back there. You know, so that's definitely something that everybody really values. And you know, as someone that's run Grand Clashes and sourced out prize support, it really doesn't cost that much. It's just the effort that goes into it. So that's something that I would certainly love to see come back from Games Workshop. But I've noticed that the OP kits are back. They're actually supporting the other games with organized play kits as well. And yeah, definitely Zach and the team there came to it and make sure that everybody left happy there. So that, you know, kudos to them on that side. Talking about the championship event, though, like I said, there were eight of us there. I got the chance to play against just about everybody, which I enjoyed. The couple highlights there was the Reno/South Lake team. I guess they had traveled quite a ways in order to get there. You know, it's in the Western U.S. as I understand it, but.
Reno's in Nevada.
Yeah, but that's still drive, probably like 4 hours, I think they were saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they made the drive down there, which was awesome. So that was Kevin and Jeff and Nick who had made that trip. I believe it was Jeff. And so Jeff Koick, he actually was one of the event sponsors. He makes these really cool warband holders that hold your tokens and cards and everything like that. He had a couple of his prototypes there. I'm sure they'll be up for sale soon. So when you see them online, make sure you give them some support. Along with that, there was a couple, Shannon and Frank from Albuquerque, I believe. And what was really cool, so Shannon was playing the Crimson Court. And Frank was playing Sons of Elmorn. Both of them played at a very high level, and both of them made the cut. So they're both there on day two, and they went 1 and 2 on the painting award. So they got some Army Painter painting supplies that were sponsored by Frontline Gaming, which was really awesome for them, and just beautiful looking miniatures there. So really the... You know, it's funny, the quantity wasn't there, but the quality was definitely high up, which is awesome. There was no gimme of a match, which I think everybody appreciated. Everybody was there who knew how to play. Everybody was there committed to playing. You know, it was an exciting time for everybody on there. I want to just mention two matches. One of them I wasn't even in. So Brandon was playing Kanan's Reapers in Championship, and Jeff was the Exiled Dead. So if you can imagine, every turn for each side had a bunch of reactions and a bunch of interactions. So that 1 hour and 45-minute time limit that they had, they were able to make one game just for the intricacies that were going in there. So it really made for an interesting match, and I was able to watch quite a bit of it. So if you really want that big army chess piece game, that is the game that you want to do for that one. Getting to play, and I'll give you a brief rundown here. I mentioned that there was the Kanans and the Exiled Dead, along with the Crimson Court and Velmorn. There was one other GSP player, and then Kevin was playing Magor's Fiend. So in a lot of my games, it was definitely a Donnybrook with two aggro sides that want to go at it. And I do want to comment that Magor's in Crimson Court, and then you could throw in the Savage Orcs, Hedrakus Mad Mob, and then I would even say Condemners. There's definitely a place for a lot of those teams in the current meta, because having those four wounds, you're not going to get an easy kill, and because they're not five wounds, you're not going to get too glory when you do get that kill. Right. So I think it's a really sweet spot for people to play in. Now, I realize that we sort of want to go through it, but the other one that I want to mention is Nick Christensen. He was playing Drepper's Wraith Creepers, and he was the gentleman that I played against in the finals. And he had you know how I said right at the start, I wanted to try and plan for everything. I did not plan for this. If someone's playing Drepers, I would expect them to play Tooth and Claw or maybe Daring Delvers to get a lot of ping damage. He was playing Fearsome Fortress.
Yeah.
And his idea behind it was to be able to get on the objectives, score passive glory, and then load up his guys. If you sent in someone, he would immediately use a couple of his in-faction pushes, which he'd have, or center of attention, or mirror move. Like he had so many push your opponent cards available that he had this control aggro, or control defensive aggro, if you want to call it. He had it down pat. And so you'd send someone in to try and get a guy. Maybe you get him, maybe you wouldn't. But the big issue is that then he'd use the pushes to slide you in the middle of the ghosts, who now all get to inspire, and then they just poke you with their sticks until your guy's done. So he definitely plays an attrition game. And with Gnarl Spirit, the biggest thing that you've got to worry about is sending your people in too early or overextending you. And he was able to take full advantage of that. So extremely, extremely close games there, which really made the highlight because it was just awesome to play.
Yeah, no, I'm glad. And I do feel like that works, right? I mean, Dreppers are really good at just standing on objectives and scoring and then counter-killing you. And so it's really interesting to see them perform that strategy to mostly success. I think did he get second in the event or?
Yeah. Yeah. So
there you go.
They did have the cut before. He ended up second there.
Yeah. Cool. Cool.
Yeah.
So what were your learnings? Like, you know, you win this event, you kind of went through, you played some good players, as you say. What were your learnings walking away from it? Like, this was pre-FAR, right? Yeah. So obviously we're going to talk about some of those changes, but outside of the GSP's stats, like what will you learn?
So the first one would be what I said before. Actually, you know, the two things. So my two biggest takeaways, if you're playing aggro, you've got to make sure that you don't overextend yourself, because any decent player will know how to bait you in and then make you pay for that. The second part, I would say those three and four model four wound fighters are definitely experiencing their renaissance now, after a lot of control and a lot of objectives. So it's it makes for a really, really fun dynamic, especially with the FAR and the beta rules for the GSP. It really makes this a much more interesting game and a much more dynamic game than I think it was even a month ago.
Okay, cool. Well, let's talk about some of that stuff. So congratulations again on your victory. I think that's awesome. You got secured your spot to the finals in the U.S. Open Series in Atlanta later this year. And I'm looking forward to seeing who else qualifies. I think it'll be a good time. Speaking of qualifications, or qualifiers rather, I know that you've got some really good news coming up north.
Well, in order there. To tell that, we're going to have to drink another beer. And this one will be a People Skills from Toolshed Brewery, who are the official sponsor of the Alberta Classic Grand Clash held in Calgary on May 27th, 28th. So I know there are several Grand Clashes that are qualifiers, which ours is. But even more than that, and for the life of me, I don't know how we accomplished this, Games Workshop has officially given us three qualifying spots for Worlds. Now, I personally feel that this is because the Alberta Classic Grand Clash is not just the greatest Canadian event, but the greatest event in North America. So if you want your chance to qualify for the Worlds, and if you want to play against the greatest of the Alberta Agro Vantage, I think you need to make a trip up to Calgary. It was my pleasure last year to take the win on that one, because I've got my world qualifier spot, because I do believe in this tournament very much. I will be TOing the entire weekend. So when you come up, if I do take bribes, so if you come in the if you come into the event with a six pack of beer, that might be looked upon fondly.
You get some favorable TO calls, huh? That's funny. I do find, well, so congrats on getting that approved. I know that a bunch of events had to go out there and apply. I know that what I do find interesting actually is that Adepticon, if you win Adepticon, there's only one qualifying spot. Right.
There is only one. Yeah.
If you win LVO, you only get one spot. If you win Nova, you get one spot. You go to Alberta to have a good time, you get three spots. Look at that.
Well, so I think the reason why last year at LVO, you know, there weren't very many. This year, I think there was only eight going for championship. Last year at Nova, they had 12. I think you've got somewhere in the 20s for Adepticon. So I hope they boost that up. We're expecting mid-20s at least, and probably getting into the 30s for ours. Vancouver and the Vancouver team out there are sending their people. Ever since we put up our notice, I've been getting calls and inquiries from everybody in the States. I know that out east in Canada, they're sending their team from game night leagues. So I think we're going to get such an amazing cross-section of people coming to this event.
Yeah, I'm excited. Congratulations. I'm not sure if I can make it. I want to. I know that we've always talked about, you know, me and the missus coming up to visiting you and the lady friend and going to hang out, maybe do some hiking. So maybe we can play Underworlds and hike as well.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. Or maybe send them on a hike while we play.
There you go. I think that might be the better way.
Yeah, I like that too. That's funny. Well, great. Well, congratulations. I know that they haven't really gone through that whole process yet. So if you have not heard back yet, do not be discouraged. We encourage you to apply. Games Workshop is doing whatever they can to support us and get us those seats so that we can have a pretty decent event at the end of the year. Moving forward, I want to talk about post-FAR stuff, but we might as well do our general Warhammer Underworld segments, which is Sleeve It or Leave It. And on this particular episode, we're going to be talking about a card called... hold on. Where did it go? Oh, Jesus. Come on, Google. I believe it's called Stockpile. It's the one where you hold objectives that equal six or more.
Yeah, I can read it out here.
Yeah.
This is a end phase objective for two glory. It is from the Fearsome Forces or Fearsome Fortress set. Score this in an end phase if your warband holds objectives whose numbers add up to six or more, i.e. objectives 2 and 4. And for the flavor text, it is our good Loon King Grinkcrack saying, keep it coming, lads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a really fun card. It's 2 glory. And we love 2 glory end phase cards. What do we think about this one? Because I was looking through Underworld's DB, and I noticed that this card, because, you know, I try to find cards for these episodes, I noticed that it was in the popular section. And I was very surprised. I'm not sure if it's popular because of the fact that it's in its own self-contained Rivals deck for Nemesis, or if it's popular because of Championship. I have my settings filtered to Championship in terms of my deck building. So I was just wanted to get your thoughts, Derek. Like, are we sleeving it or are we leaving it?
So I'm going to start off on the Nemesis side. Nemesis, I would always sleeve it. The reason why is that in your objectives decks, if you're playing Fearsome Fortress, you're going to be trying to get 2 or 3 of those objectives anyway. Now, what's interesting is that a lot of the objective cards with Fearsome Fortress actually say feature token instead of objective. So sometimes they do conflict with each other when it comes to strategy. But for the most part, this is going to be something that's really good if you're playing Loom Court, if you're bringing back the Grim Watch, if you're doing Thorns of the Briar Queen. So in that case, you're almost always going to see it. Now, Championship, I think, is a little bit more of a question because you need to hold 2, but you need to hold a specific 2. So in Nemesis, it's definitely a sleeve it. In Championship, I would say it's on the bubble.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. I think I'm definitely going to sleeve it in Nemesis, given the fact that limited format, so in terms of card options and cards that can give you a big swing like this, and sometimes just very organically, you just flip and you happen to have, like, you know, 5 and 4 or 3 and 4 on your side or whatever. Like, it's pretty solid, 2 and 4. So that's really nice. And then I think now that most objectives tend to be, you know, towards the midboard or you're trying to fight for it, I think it works quite well. I think in Championship, I think I still want to sleeve this card. And I'll tell you why. Because I think if your objective is to stand on objectives in order to win the game, then you kind of need to maximize as much scoring as you can in that limited window. Because the meta is formulated at the moment to reward aggression. And I think what I've seen in the games I've either observed or played, there's all usually just one phase out of the three where the objective standing player is going to get the most points, whether that's early in the game or whether that's after the opponent has blown their pushes. And so with this card, I feel like if you can get this with a great gains, maybe even with purifiers and their faction temporary victory, I think it's quite an interesting card. So I'm not going to leave it, because I think if I'm playing objectives, I'm going to definitely evaluate this card.
No, that makes a lot of sense.
Right on. Okay, so I think we're fairly positive on that card. Listeners, let us know whether you sleeve it or leave it. The next segment that we're going to go to is our Inspiration Strikes. And in this segment, if you're not familiar, you get a minute. One of us is going to go. We're going to talk for a minute, and we're going to be uninterrupted. We can talk about good things, bad things. We try to keep it Warhammer Underworlds related. It can be an inspiring monologue. It can be a jest. It can be a rant. It could be whatever the speaker intends for it to be. And in this episode, we're going to have the one and only Captain Murder. Captain Orator, go on a murderous rant about something Warhammer Underworlds related. And so I'm going to set the timer. Derek, I know I sprung this on you right before we started recording.
Yeah. Any last words? In Amon's future defense, we didn't clear this. So I don't think he has any idea what I'm talking about. And so don't blame him for publishing this as I understand it, that he should not be held liable for any of the incitements that I put in.
That is actually a very terrifying disclaimer. So, okay. Well, your time will start in 3, 2, 1, and go.
All right. So the big thing that I do want to talk about today is how community will affect the greater scheme of competition in Warhammer Underworlds. I've talked before about if you want your local community to thrive, if you're not getting as many in-person games that you want to, you need to cowboy up and actually build that community yourself. Now, I want to go one step further because we do have Worlds coming in November. And what that means is that you need to be able to support not just your own local community, you need to be able to get the players that you have in your particular area, but you also need to support the bigger events. Now, I'm going to really talk about the Alberta Classic here, because one thing that everybody knows is that none of y'all Americans can beat us in Alberta. So come up here, prove me wrong, because otherwise we're going down to Atlanta, we're taking your hardware, we're bringing it back up here so badly that when the next Warhammer release comes out, they're going to call it Canada Stands!
Time. You know what's crazy? You actually got through everything you needed to say perfectly with that 1 minute. Very well done. I'm giving you a golf clap, and I hope that our listeners are giving you one as well. Lots of things you said there. Let's dissect that. Number one, you started by talking about building the community. And I think that's something that is very important in this stage of the game. We need to build that community, but we need people to volunteer and step up and be that person. So I understand that you tell them to cowboy up. What are some ways realistically that you can get someone to realistically cowboy up? Like maybe two pieces of advice as someone who's helped build and rebuild the community locally.
So the two things about it is so social media is a big part of it. If you have Discord or Facebook or whatever else is sort of the preferred way for the gaming community in your area, make sure you're posting that you're there every week. Post what you're working on. Really being active online is a huge part of it, because even if you're not getting people out every week to your local meetup, at the very least, you're getting people showing off their warbands or showing off their interest. The next part of it is pick one night a week that you are 90% available. For us, it's Tuesdays. Tuesday is the easiest day that everybody is able to make it out to the Ogre's Den Gaming Club or to our local GW or to the Sentry Box. And you pick, usually it'll be Ogre's Den, but we're happy to sort of go where the most people are willing to or if there's new people. But make it consistent on that consistent day. Those are sort of the two big parts of it. Put yourself out there online, put yourself out there in person.
Awesome. Great feedback, great advice. And the only thing I'll follow up with that is if you are someone who is very well versed in the game and you're trying to attract new blood, maybe try to do it on the same night as maybe like a Magic night or maybe another smaller skirmish game. Because then if someone's just walking in or they can't get a game themselves, it's going to pique their interest. You know, Magic is a card game. Yu-Gi-Oh! Is a card game. Underworlds is a pseudo card game in a way. I found success going to board game night, you know, because Underworlds, if you think about it, is a very competitive board game, self-contained. And I've gotten some interest and some boxes sold that way. But yeah, being consistent, being friendly, and just lose, man. Like even if you're a good player with some pride, lose to the new guys. They're going to like get a huge boost from winning their first game. In fact, Games Workshop demo games are based like that too, right? Where you have someone come in. No matter what happens, they're going to lose, right? So you should do the same. Build that confidence up. Be patient. And then kick their butt later when they're good at it. So that would be feedback.
That's really a big part of it. And I didn't mention this before, but I do want to now. Don't gatekeep. Chances are your local meta knows, and I know, and Amon knows that you could collect a lot of glass. But you know what? Making sure that trying out new things so that you help develop that community, making sure that other people get it. If you have a qualifier spot for Worlds, don't go collecting more of them. Because quite frankly, if you're that good, go beat them in Atlanta.
Yes. Well said, Derek. Now, the second thing that you mentioned was the Canadians attempting to enter the United States and attempting to steal something that doesn't belong to them. And so we're going to have to address that. I love my fellow Canadians. I have family up in Canada. I don't say Canada. I say Canada like it's supposed to be. Yeah. So I, you know, I love you guys, but as a patriotic American, there is no way in hell I'm letting a Canadian walk away with the trophy. So you better cowboy up, Derek, because you're going to have some stiff competition down here. We've got some good players in the United States, but ultimately it's just really nice. You know, I know you mentioned the word or the term worlds. I know that it's not necessarily worlds, right? It's more of like a North American thing with, you know, maybe even Central and South America players attempting to come as well. Obviously, you know, there's an incredible scene in Europe and in the UK and particularly in Poland and in Germany as well. So I want to give everyone a shout out there. We are by no means saying the winner of this is the number one Underworlds player in the world.
I am.
But they might be. Well, Derek is saying that. I'm not endorsing that. What I am saying, though, is this person might be the number one North American player for a year, right? So that's something that's cool. And if you are in Europe, you can always come and play. You know, qualify. I think you can qualify in the UK.
Yeah, there are qualifiers in Europe and Australia too, actually.
Great. Let's have some people from down under as well. Hmm. So very exciting to see what the future holds. And I wanted to thank Derek for not only partaking in his first Inspiration Strikes, but, you know, knocking it out of the park, man. Look at you.
Appreciate that.
So what I want to talk about next is just looking at the meta holistically, you know, championship. We have had all these changes. We've had plenty of time to digest what's looking good in the far list. And I wanted to take your, I wanted to have a candid discussion really on what we thought was good in the current championship scene. I know that I personally feel like there were some cards that were missed during the far list, a particular cursed weapon, a pike particularly, that I think they missed that, to be honest. I think there was a weird selection of cards for GSP. I think they accidentally picked Oath of Fortitude when it was supposed to be another card, but very easy to make that mistake. I genuinely believe that was a mistake. But outside of that, I guess, Derek, have you played much in a post-FAR championship world? And if so, like, what are some of the trends you're seeing?
Yeah, I've played quite a bit. So my comment on the Four Wound Warbands before definitely is part of it. I think the beta rule for GSP was hugely important. I initially thought that they would either do something like you needed two spirit counters to turn into a beast or make struggle a reaction. How they've done it, I think it's good because now the first two rounds, the GSP will, or the first two actions, the GSP will be on their basic stats. I do sort of wonder if keeping that as a reaction might be good, but GSP is really good as is. So I don't know if they need to do any more tuning to that. You know, if I was to make a suggestion, I would just make struggle a straight reaction. I think that would make things a little bit simpler for the use of that. In terms of playing, the new far list is awesome. I also don't think they went far enough. I've got a bit of a short list on what I would like to see. I also think that they really missed Sons of Elmorn. I believe that command counter, either they should start each round with command counter or don't clear command counters at the end of each round. Because there's, you know, at present, they're just underpowered for what they're trying to do. And it doesn't put them in a place to really be able to play in this meta or play in this game. And I think that that's too bad because I think everything else is in there. When it comes to
let's pause on that really quickly. No, you're good. Let's pause on that. So we saw an update to Black Powder's Buccaneers, which I think everyone really appreciated the gesture. Yeah, you love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I do think they missed Velmorn as well. I think the command counter stuff was certainly something that could have been addressed. They could have impacted the way that the fighters, because I feel like once the fighters inspire, it's not too bad, right? But it's like they don't live long enough to inspire. So, you know, they could have messed around with sibling rivalry as well, made it to where you can inspire two of them. I think there's so many things that they could have done, and it's not to say that they won't do it in the future, but completely agree that that was a miss. In terms of like the current meta, have you seen like a warband in particular like be a standout? Because for me, that's purifiers, but I wanted to get your thoughts on what warband is kind of a standout for you.
So funnily enough, yeah, I was going to say purifiers as well. The other one really is Blackheart. Blackheart with Fearsome Fortress is definitely, you know, it's a contender in Nemesis now.
Blackheart?
Blackheart's Buccaneers.
Black Powder. Gotcha. Okay.
Black Powder's Buccaneers. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I was like, who is Blackheart?
you know, he's an ogre knot. You know?
Yes.
But, you know, because Mange and the parrot, who I forget their name, inspire up to three, being able to get them with a quick charge, preferably on a feature token in that fortress area, and get the additional swag and then move up your boss to come up in that area, have the support from the Knoblars. There's some cool stuff that they can do now. And because the inspiration mechanic has been tweaked, that makes such a big difference for them. So I think that they'll be something to watch now.
I think that's fair. Yeah, I think that warband was always just missing a little bit of oomph. They have like, you know, Black Powder has the damage output. I think some of their objectives are a little tough, but if you can supplement that with, you know, a rival's deck. Okay, that makes sense. I like that. Let's talk about purifiers. So obviously, I think a lot of people have kind of caught on to the fact that in faction pings with pings that are in another deck, Daring Delver is pretty solid. Even Fearsome Fortress is a pretty good option for the purifiers. And that's because they have some great in-faction cards. And if Bahanar lives in the early game, then I think it can really shift the tide for the purifying player. What do you think about them?
So the typical strategy of going after purifiers is always throw everything you have to at Bahanar until he goes down. And then hope that you got him down quick enough before they scored too much passive glory to clean up the rest of them. If you don't do that, unfortunately, Bahanar just becomes too much of a beast and will collect a lot of glory at the end. So that's, you know, and that's just how the world works for that. With all their pings, I was counting with Daring Delvers. They've got two solid ones plus another in-faction one. They've got a fair amount of pushes. They have good passive glory. I think Miari's with Daring Delvers. I would actually say that the ping that they have, Miari
Channel the Wind, I think.
Yeah, I would actually put that on restricted.
You would restrict it. Ping damage.
You know what that would do is make it so that in championship now you don't have the two pings or three pings from two pings and objective from Daring Delvers plus the additional ping or two plus all that range. I would say that that's probably the tweak that I would almost suggest for that one.
Yeah, I dig it. That makes sense. I mean, if you're going to hit all the ping in the game, you might as well hit faction ping. That being said, though, some factions kind of need the ping, but maybe purifiers have enough tools to where you have to make them, you know, take that choice.
No, I'd agree. The other one that I think does deserve a little bit is Gorechosen. Gorechosen, either with Fearsome Fortress or with Daring Delvers, are definitely good in Nemesis, and I think they've got a really good place in that championship as well.
Yeah, the Gorechosen is really interesting because, like, on paper, they kind of have all the beats of, like, oh no, big boy, elite warband, a lot of wounds, a lot of damage, but they haven't really, like, dominated a meta per se. They are good. They're consistent. They are good counters, good foils to other strategies, specific strategies in particular, I think. I think before the far list, I would say that they were probably your best bet into GSP. Mm-hmm. And now post far list, it's certainly more of a competition, more of an open game. So I definitely think they're good. I wonder if, you know, we talk about aggro a lot. We talk about how GSP like heavily warped this meta, but I don't know if GSP is that like ever warping presence anymore. Like, I think they're good, but they play like fast aggro.
Yeah.
Right. And that's just been a staple in the game consistently. Do you think the meta is going to move away from countering fast aggro by either killing the aggro faster than they can kill you or outlasting them to something that's a bit more slower, like objective based?
Yeah, I do think so. It's not going to happen right away, unfortunately, because Beastbound Assault as a rival stack doesn't really give a lot of credence to being an objective subtle playstyle. You know, that sounds pretty over the top. So I hope with next season they start to shift that. And to Games Workshop and the design team's credit, as one style of play has become more prevalent, they've made releases that has made other styles of play better. There is an obvious focus on that control aggro meta where they want you to be engaging, but they want you to be able to pick up glory for doing the objectives along with your game plan. So finding that sweet spot is always difficult, especially with the release schedule. So I think that we'll see that. The pendulum keeps swinging.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the pendulum does keep swinging. And I think you're right. Beastbound Assault doesn't very sound like a very objective or control-y style deck. And on top of that, the new warband coming out, Grisel's Aranai, doesn't look like a very hold objective style warband either.
They look like more murder girls to me.
Yeah, your favorite. Yeah. So favorite type of girls. What do you think some dark horses out there? Because like, I we've talked about Purifiers, we've talked about Gorechosen, obviously Hexbane's GSP still in the race or in the conversation. What about Dread Pageant? What are your thoughts on them?
You know, Dread Pageant with Delvers definitely has a lot of play. They're probably, you know what, they're always decent. I've always loved their Inspire condition. I've always loved how they play. I even have my Korn version of the Dread Pageant converted up that I do enjoy breaking out every once in a while. So
the Murder Pageant.
Pardon me?
The Murder Pageant.
The Murder Pageant, indeed. So there's definitely some play there. When it comes to Dark Horses, though, the two that I really expect to get a little bit more play, especially in Nemesis, would be Grimwatch and Thorns. I would even say that there is some room for Rawthorn and probably even Molog out there. There's some definite playability in a lot of different areas. And right now, what I would really encourage people, so I've got sort of actually two recommendations. If you're a player, play what you enjoy, because again, that pendulum's going to swing, and when it does, and you see that really sick combo or that new that sick combo for championship or a rivals deck comes out that just suits it so well for rivals or for Nemesis, you're going to all that work, all the reps that you're putting in now is going to feel so worth it as you start steamrolling people. Right. So it's I would really encourage that. On the flip side, what I would encourage Games Workshop and the playtesters to put out a far list or an errata probably every 3 months. I think all the other Games Workshop games are getting that type of treatment, or in Kill Team they call it the balanced data slate, things like that. And I think that we went September to January, so we went 5 months. With from release going out to the end of LVO, so February. So yeah, almost 6 months without sort of tuning down the Gnarl Spirit like they might have needed to be. And I think that was a bit of a detriment to the game. So I would encourage quicker erratas going forward.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir there, especially on this podcast, I think. We all want more balance updates. I hope that they're able to, you know, pump them out. Ideally, once a quarter would be great. But I think if you look at historically, like the worst places of the game, the worst points of the game where people are leaving the game or losing interest is when there are some obvious changes that need to be made, but it takes 3+ months to make said changes. You know, like my favorite fix was post Power Unbound. You have this Power Unbound deck that comes out and all the cards in it are pretty much busted. And then 2 weeks later, Games Workshop restricts 6 of them, which I thought was awesome because it was very evident that like the game was going to go nutso. And it was still pretty nuts at the time. But it's like GSP is very obviously busted. Molag at the time with Tome of Offering was very obviously busted. Grimwatch, Thorns. I mean, you know, and those are the times of the game where people like leave. Cursebreakers even. So, I think we are moving a little bit away from the conversation surrounding just the championship meta. But I think overall, I think the meta is pretty wide open. We do have, again, GSP, Gorechosen, Hexbanes, Purifiers, even you're saying Black Powders, Grimwatch, Thorns, lots of stuff that you can experiment and play with.
Rippas.
Yeah, Headcrackers for sure.
Condemners. Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff there.
Yeah. Moving into the Nemesis conversation, which you started, I think particularly, and maybe we don't need to go into a deep dive because I know that we're short on time and, you know, kind of like got to get back to work type of situation. But I'd love to, I have a question for you and I'd love to get your thoughts on this. And we don't have to go into too much detail, but we've seen, at least in North America, that all the events, including the Alberta Grand Clash, that's offering up 3 seats to Atlanta, is Nemesis.
Yep.
Right. So we have this environment where we're talking about the best championship player in the world. And then we have LVO, which is a championship event. And then every single event announced post LVO is going to be Nemesis. And then we have these balance updates that hopefully are going to be more frequent. Hopefully they, you know, they come more often, but we've just had one recently, but it does not impact the Nemesis format at all. Right. So I pose a question in the Vassal Discord and, you know, I think more Europeans are in there or more responsive than anyone else. And so they were kind of like, why are you, you know, just focusing on America when there are other people in other parts of the world that play the game? And I think they're right. And, you know, and then that wasn't the intent. It was more so like if all official events in our region, right, are Nemesis. Why do we care about a far list? Why do we care about balance updates every quarter? Unless they make a Nemesis balance update, right? Which doesn't seem like they're inclined to do that at the moment. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that concept.
Yeah, I get that. I'm in favor of it, though. I would love to see that far list apply to Nemesis. I think then you'd have GSP would have to choose between the 3 restricted in Tooth and Claw and the 3 restricted in their faction. There's 5 for Rippas, there's 5 for for Hexbanes, with Darren Delvers and Thorns, there's 6, which I think is good. So yeah, I'm actually fully in favor of applying the FAR to Nemesis.
Yeah. So do you think, and so I appreciate you sharing your thoughts on that, but going back to the question, like, do these championship updates matter if we're all just playing Nemesis?
I think they do at this stage because there is still a lot of championship. I think right now we see that Games Workshop is trying to steer the game towards Nemesis. I've got to wonder if in a couple years championship looks like your faction cards plus a rival deck plus the essentials and that's it. And honestly, if it is, I'm good for that. Like I love the plot lock. Personally, and I know I'm in the minority of that opinion, but I think that that's been such a good design space for the game. I enjoy Nemesis quite a bit just because it, and I realize for the people that played Yu-Gi-Oh or Magic or Vampire the Eternal Struggle or Pokemon before, you know, that the card building aspect has been a big thing for it, but the actual tactical gameplay is what I love about Underworlds and what I think makes it a much better game than any of the others out there.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that makes sense. I wonder, I mean, the plot lock is a very interesting conversation because it's mostly surrounding the fact that like every Rivals deck so far has had a plot card, right? we could very well see Beastbound Assault not have a plot card.
Right.
And that opens things up tremendously, right? But even then, it doesn't change the way Nemesis is played. And so maybe this isn't, I think maybe we just don't align on the whole idea of the balance updates, but I sometimes think that these balance updates are moot. Like, I get it. You know, there are people that play Championship and I respect that and I want them to have a balanced environment. But like, A, I don't think the far list was comprehensive enough and we both agreed on that. So like, what's to stop people from making their own far list? Okay, well, there's no uniformity. Fine. That can happen over time as we've talked about it. I think Baconborn was saying something about that as well the other day. But I guess for now, for this present time period, like the far list doesn't matter if you're trying to play in the US Series Open. And it's like, that kind of just feels weird to me as someone who's maybe, this could be just me showing my age or like me not understanding like, but where's the balance, you know? But it's like, Nemesis is not a balanced format.
Yeah.
You know, there are warbands in there that certainly will thrive over others. And there are other warbands that need more support than others. Some come built in with a lot of support. So I don't know, maybe it's food for thought, but
yeah.
I just wanted to get that out there because I want to hear other people's thoughts, you know, like, am I thinking about this the wrong way? Or is there validity to anything that I'm saying? So sounds like you've said your piece on it.
No, well, we'll see how it is going forward. One nice thing about Underworlds is that it is very dynamic. Every season brings something new. So, you know, if you don't like it now, wait 6 months.
But that's not a good answer, right? That's like saying you don't like Molag with Toma Offering, wait 6 months. You don't like GSP, wait 6 months. Like, how many times do I have to wait 6 months?
Well, if you're going to be a curmudgeon and you're not going to like something every 6 months, I mean, that's on you. But, you know, I really do feel this is the best miniatures game out there.
But I'm not saying that, right? Like, I'm not challenging that it's a great game. I'm not challenging any of that. What I'm saying is, you know, if we look at the whole concept of these balance updates, they're not affecting the way they want us to play the game.
And that's true. They do need to be more constant. Like I said, a far less or errata for Nemesis, I think would be the way. But
okay, well, I guess that we'll move on from that one. Is there anything else that you wanted to add, Derek? I know that we got to get back to work. So,
yeah.
So
no, any, you know, any comments? I think we sort of covered it. Yeah, like I'm. You know, maybe it's just up here. We've only been out of COVID restrictions for a year now, and the 2 years that we were under them, 2.5, really slowed down a lot of gameplay. So I'm in this long term honeymoon of actually being glad that I'm getting out and playing. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's been nice.
Yeah, and it's great for the team because we either meet at the store or. We'll meet at a pub and get in some Wingspire. But it's, nice. Yeah, you know what? And I just love traveling in general. So I think it's been great to actually get out. I mean, I know I mentioned at Nova, I got to meet a lot of people for the first time. Vegas, it was great seeing people that I hadn't seen in 3 years. You know, so I'm going to keep on it and, boy, like I cannot wait for Atlanta. I'm looking forward to this season. I'm like a happy puppy right now. I'm just enjoying everything. I am rising like the early morning gnarlwood.
Jesus. All right. Well, I think that's a great way to end the episode. And yeah, certainly. Again, you know, like I don't know if maybe I get that you're really high on the game right now. I'm not saying that I'm not high on the game. I'm just saying. That I don't know, maybe I'm being a little grump, but I really don't think so. I thought it was an interesting conversation, but you know, maybe the answer as always is wait or play, right? But I just thought it would, anyways. Well, cool, Derek, thanks for jumping on the episode. Again, if you want to hear more from Derek or talk to Derek, you can reach out to him on Discord at Captain Murder. Very active there. You are playing in the Vassal League, right?
Yes, I am.
That's awesome. I hope your games are going well. And yeah, Alberta Grand Clash. You want to just recap that very quickly, the dates?
Yeah, so May 27th and 28th in Calgary, Alberta. You know, we did get 3.5 feet of snow yesterday, but chances are that should all melt. No, it won't melt by then. Probably about half of it will be gone by then. So it's a beautiful area to come up. We will assist with helping you find hotels or travel arrangements, anything else you need. Because Calgary, you know, it's a small enough city that a lot of us can get around, and we do have some dedicated support to make sure that that, you know what, again, I don't know how we got through qualifying spots, but boy, are we going to earn that. So looking forward to seeing everybody come up here.
Roger that. Looking forward to hearing about it and hopefully being a part of it myself, which will be very exciting. And so thank you again, Derek, for being an awesome member of this community, awesome friend of the show, awesome personal friend of mine as well. And looking forward to seeing what you do this year and watching the Canadians lose at Atlanta. They are indeed fighting words. Well, cool. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you to our Patreon supporters. If you'd like to join our current patrons, you can do so at patreon.com/pathtoglory. You can find all of our blog content on pathtoglorypodcast.com. And if you have any feedback, questions, or comments, let us know on Facebook, Twitter, or Discord at Path to Glory Podcast. Please rate and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And as always, thanks for listening, and we wish you the best of luck on your Path to Glory.